This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Hello everybody, this is Clint Locklear. I am in... Where are we? Pennsylvania somewhere.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, that's all it is. Where is it, Pennsylvania?
Schuylerville. Kill.
Yeah. Wherever we're at.
Yep.
Well, this is better than last time. We're meeting in a motel room. Now we're just meeting out towards the edge of the woods.
With mosquitoes.
With mosquitoes. Not people are going to be thinking we're over here smoking dope or something. But I've got Jeff with me, and you've already did your demos, right?
Yeah, yesterday.
And do demos, and if you've never done demos, you never know how you're going to start it, which is the hardest part. Would you agree?
Yeah,
just the first. So, but I did find a way today to have Gap Mouth all across the stands. Because I talked about portable pockets in yoga.
Yep.
And I introduced it by saying I'm an organic, free-range, wild fur farmer, feral libertarian, peaceful seditionist, permaculturist with a hippie slant. That way they would know what they were getting into when we started talking about yoga and trapping.
Yeah, when they started off like that, they don't know what to expect.
It was wide-eyed and open-mouthed. It was kind of funny. And if Jen did the video right, we'll have that up on YouTube. But yeah, I don't think she was filming their faces.
Yeah, that'd be awesome if she got their face, the expression on their faces.
Well, the reason, because I told you I'm going to abuse you about two different things.
Yeah.
And I think it's too big to do in one show for both of them.
Okay.
But I had a guy a week and a half ago call and start really asking me a lot of questions about gray fox. And I've never done a whole lot of gray fox. I mean, I've never just went out and targeted gray fox. I've caught gray fox and I've tried to catch gray fox. But I'm by no means a gray fox trapper. Because it's hard. I think to me it's hard for a coyote trapper that sets for coyotes to figure out how to catch, because they're so different.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, well, I'm going to be seeing the gray fox man himself in Pennsylvania, Jeff Dunlap, and we're going to talk about gray fox.
Yep.
So
you're a gray fox trapper and don't even know it. Just not as a coyote trapper. Like a lot of the sets you make for cats, they're like cat trapping and the gray fox trapping is like interchangeable a lot of times. I mean, sometimes it's different, but the similarities to me in the way I trap them are about the same. You know, I use a lot of brush cubbies, stuff like that, and you know, and the feathers. I don't put the hanging feather like you would in a tree to, you know, get them attracted from a long distance. But
yeah. Have you ever tried flagging gray fox?
I have, and it didn't seem to matter. You know, but okay. You know, in the areas of the country I was at, it might have been that way, but, you know, somewhere else, and it didn't seem to spook them like it would a coyote, you know, so, you know, cause, I mean, you know how aggressive they are. They're not, they think they weigh 300 pounds.
Do you think anything spooks a gray fox?
I think when the coyotes get on them when they're in a trap, I think that spooks them. That maybe not even then, because they're pretty feisty animal. But I do a lot of blocking. I put the sets in positions where they can't, even if they get around to the back to get in where I want them, the approach is they have to come in on that side to come into the set. And, using feathers and blocking and, you know, just force them to where you want them.
Define your blocking. We need a Picasso mental picture.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. My mind's still standing at the booth. If you're like in pine straw, and you made a long, narrow wall on one side, you made the same long parallel on the opposite side, and then placed your trap at the beginning, you know, or into all the way to the middle of that pine straw, and built your cubby on the back end of that.
Yeah. So you're not doing sticks, you're just piling up the pine straw.
I'll do sticks, but the pine straw is the best, because, you know, you're creating a path almost like a one trap trench set, and forcing them into that edge. And even if they want to bounce all over the place, at some point they're going to walk down that narrow corridor you put for them. And you can, in the back of that, you could, you know, put a dirt hole, you can put whatever you want in that corridor. And you can use just about any natural substance out there to do it. It's just, you know, that happened to, you know, be the area down in Louisiana where I was catching the grays. That happened to be the main thing, them pines. So.
Now you have gray fox in Michigan.
Yep.
Now do you do the same thing with the spruce browse, or do you have pine up there too?
Yeah, I'll take and, you know, like balsam branches and bust them off and, you know, create a little funnel. I mean, they're going to want to bounce all over that set, and, you know, but the thing is the main thing is to me is I want them, when they finally settle down and they approach that set, that it's set up from the front, and it really wouldn't matter what it is, what kind of cubby, as long as you're forcing them through that gap.
So even, it sounds, it's kind of like the cat, like when I do cats. If a cat somehow broke in the back, he's still probably coming out the front.
Yeah.
So he's going to be over.
That's why I say that, you know, you're a gray fox trapper and just don't know it.
Well, how come I don't catch more of them?
Because you're setting for coyotes where the where the grays are.
So you don't just do like dirt holes then?
No.
Because that's where I always get frustrated.
Yeah. I'll do some dirt holes to them, but I'll block them, you know, block them with the same type of set, you know, where you're forcing them into that gap. And, you know, and I'll do a dirt hole where I'll pile up, like, get a bunch of the freezy figure and the pine straw piled up in the back. And in the bottom of that pile, I'll put my hole, and then I'll go and line that pine straw up on both sides, and then make my dirt hole right back in there, so that I have the approach all set up. And you know, and there, I mean, there's some trial, you know, and when people are talking about it, somebody goes out and does exactly what I say, and they have trouble. There's trial and error to this. It isn't, you just go out and you do that. But I mean, you know, you get in the positioning of the trap right and everything, you know. But you know, I mean, that gives them the general understanding of, you know, that. It's like with cat trapping and gray trapping, you can block the animal down. It's foolish to leave them any other spot to put their foot but other than where you want. Coyotes you can't do that with, so you can't do it. But I mean, if you have a gray, an animal you can block down, why give them an option? Just you know, set their mind in stone on what you want them to do.
When I played with, I mean, it's embarrassing to say, but I was at a place in North Carolina. And me and this gray fox went to war for 2 weeks, and I didn't win. But it would come back and screw with me every single night but one, if I remember correctly. Before that 2 weeks was over, I had 9 traps around one dirt hole, and that little peckerhead could still steal my bait.
Yeah.
And I had it up against a pine tree, and I was almost thinking about putting a 330 in the air because I was thinking he was rappelling down.
Yeah.
I mean, and when I think of gray fox, that is what I think about. It's just... It seemed like no matter what I did, they would do the opposite.
Yeah. They got a small foot. I mean, you look at their pattern, I mean, it's on their track, I mean, it's smaller than a house cat, you know, a big-sized house cat. And, I mean, you're trying to get them to place it on a little pen. And, I mean, they like to sidestep stuff. But it's like when I make, like, my set, what I'll do is it seems like them grays, when they step down, they like to put the outside of their foot onto like a structure, like. And so I know them grays, like when I'm making my pan the lowest spot, I'll make it a lot, not, I mean, probably like it's normally like say a quarter inch lower, just a dip. And with them grays, I'll make it considerably, like maybe 3/4 of an inch deep, because it seems like they like to have the outside of their foot like on a structure, you know. So, and it might seem like it, you know, some of that, it doesn't matter, but, you know, if you put it all together as a system, it does work.
One of the places, where was this at? I think it was Alabama, when we were filming the trapping TV thing, and I was setting for coyotes, not really thinking about gray fox, and I was running these sets, and I was putting these little wings of dirt off to help guide the coyote. And it was really sugar sand, so you could see everything.
Yeah.
And where I had that wing wall coming off of that dirt hole to move that coyote around a little bit, like something, that's where the dirt went. What I kept seeing over and over again is the foot was, and the foot's only like the size of a dime.
Yeah.
You know, and it would physically be on the edge of the hump and the flat ground. And that's how they went into the set. And I kept looking at that going, even with a big pan, there's no way to physically get a trap that tight against something with the pan, because you got the jaw's the issue.
Yeah, that's an issue. I usually put like guide sticks at like 3 o'clock and about 10:30, you know, and that, I mean, that you're still can have that sidestepping. But, you know, that'll force them to that center somewhat. And
so are you, because in my mind, what I was thinking, I've just never been around gray fox that much since then. I was thinking about having the guide stick, and this may be what you're doing. If you have of course, no one can see what my hands are doing. But you got your trap, and then if I put that wall as tight as I can get the trap with my big pans, but have the guide stick going parallel to that trap, so it's like it extends the edge of that pile that's going out.
Yep. Yep.
Where that is now over the pan, so if they get that close again, they got to be in. But yep. Then the stick's got to be where it can't fall in the jaws of the trap,
yep.
And the trap can still fire.
Yeah.
You follow
yep.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. That's pretty much what I'm doing, except for the stick laying down. I'm sticking it up, but it wouldn't matter.
You so know? You're like a 45 going yep. into the pat into yep. the trap jaws.
Yeah.
Yep.
Forcing them in, you know, right into that spot. And what I'll do is, because like when I was down there, you don't want to pass up a cat. So what I would do is I figured that them cats, what I would do is short step them. And I'd put a, right in front of the trap, I would put a stick, right in front of it, like a step stick. But I would short step them cats and the grays to make them stop right there. You mm-hmm. know, so on some of them sets, like a trench set, I would put that, in front of it to get them to stop, because otherwise the step pattern on the cats and the gray, where the gray is going to be standing when he's goosenecking and looking, trying to look down that hole, and then where that cat's going to stand, it's two different things. But if you can get them both to stop right where you want, so that seemed to work real good, putting that stick right in front of the trap to get them, because when they're strolling up there, and I mean you're not seeing it, you're just figuring, but I figured that that would get them to stop, and it did, because they're strolling up there and you're screwing up their step pattern, and when they reshuffle their feet, they would both be in the same spot right in front of that stick.
Kind of like if you saw something weird in a parking lot, you walk up and there's those concrete things that your yep. tires can't go over.
Yeah,
we would probably stop in front of that trying yep. to figure something out before yep. we'd step over.
Yeah, the same with them.
That makes sense. Well, I didn't know you blocked them down that much.
Yeah.
Now do you use any cages?
No, I haven't used. I mean, I've messed around and caught some, but the thing is it's so being from out of state, I have a hard time hauling everything down there, and I've been pretty effective with the foothold, so I'm just stuck with that. But I haven't messed around with a lot of the cages. I've caught them in 160s, like in hole sets where you dig the hole, say 2 foot back by the size of like a 2 gallon bucket around, and I was setting for coon and I caught grays and that. And I make that set without the conibear. I'll put just a foothold out in front of that, and I'll take that dirt, make it look like a badger hole set or something, or a woodchuck hole set. Put that dirt all around, put the feathers, right inside the mouth of the hole and all that. And
so that's basically kind of like the Krause Outlaw set he wrote about in those
yeah.
books.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, so you hadn't?
No, I never heard of it.
He called it an outlaw set, and I've done what you've done, and I've done it where the hole, that big auger, I can make it go straight down.
Yeah.
Because I've seen where the gray fox on my 4-inch auger, a gray fox will get in the hole, climb all the way down 2 feet, steal my bait, and climb all the way back out.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
well, you're going straight down?
Well, I don't know. My coyote sets are on a 45.
Yeah.
But you'll see how they went in there.
This would be like, I think you guys call it like a bandit set. When in Scott Adams' 5x5 video, how you guys did that
mm-hmm.
along a creek? It'd be like that, but not along a creek, like in a bank.
Okay.
It'd be like that. Without the conibear, it'll be like just a foothold, out in front of it. And I throw that dirt all over and, make it look like something's really happening. I'll even take that tiling spade and, put a run up to it and, to give them that smooth look coming into it.
Well, if you're, what are you looking at besides seeing tracks? If you're in an area, what are you looking at for location?
I mean, I'm like everybody else. I like to see tracks, but when I'm setting, most of the time I don't ever even see any sign of anything. I'm just setting I'm a location setter, and I like the old logging roads. That's my main thing I like to set is the old logging roads. In a real thick cover, the thicker the cover, basically what I'm looking at is a spot where I figure the like a rabbit would get away from a gray, try to get away from a gray fox, or a gray fox would be trying to get away from a coyote, you know.
Okay.
And you know,
almost cat location.
Yeah, cat, exact cat locations. And you know, just like crop changes, but you know, with timber, not with you know, necessarily like a hay field or something like that, you know. And especially if you find, like, a lot of times where that timber changes are, like from the pine into like a hardwoods or something, there'll be a trail running down through there. And you know, and I'll do a lot of blind sets, and even in the old logging roads, I try and do some blind sets in them, you know, like a double blind set, and you know, even, you know, single.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times you'll see, like in one of the old tracks, there'll be maybe some weeds, you know, growed up, or you know that it's narrowed down naturally, or you know, I go even bring some over there and block it down.
That makes, so if you see that, is that in replacement of your cubby set or along with your cubby set?
But because I'm setting them sets, if I'm gonna put, if it's a good looking blind set, I'm not gonna mess with nothing else. I'm just gonna try and keep them naturally just cruising down through there, you know. But but usually I'll try and set, like if I'm making the cubby sets, I'll put in two of those, you know. Usually it's two, you know.
But is the reason for that for easy to keep up with, or
just, and usually a lot of times the gray, you'll catch two grays, you know. It just, they seem to, you know, that time of year when I'm trapping them, at least it's, you know, you'll catch, you know, you might not catch a double, you'll catch doubles, but you'll also, you'll catch one and you'll catch the other one. But if you ain't got two traps there, you can't catch both of them. So,
well, what I've noticed in Tennessee, if I catch a gray, it's usually really fast.
Yeah.
And then the next night is the partner.
Yeah.
And then I might as well go somewhere else.
Yeah. That when I was trapped out in Arizona, it was like that. If you caught two grays, you might as well pull. You know. But down there, and that's generally how it is. Like, but it was weird down there in Louisiana this year. As I got in the area and just kept catching predators. And I looked on the map and I couldn't figure, I looked for, you know, I mean, I had water systems. I couldn't ever pinpoint why all these predators there. But, I mean, I would catch, you know, grays 10 days, 14 days later. They were still, even the occasional red fox would just show up. I mean, and I don't even know why this red fox came there. But, I mean, they were just like predator highway. I just happened to drop right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. You know. But generally, you know, like you say, I mean, you catch them pretty quick, and you know, just keep moving. But generally, I don't get where I'll camp on a spot. That just happened to work out that way because of my other troubles down there. I was forced into that situation. But generally, I'll, you know, catch the cream and, you know, pull up and move and just keep.
So you're talking about
on.
Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be on the next show about the great treatment you got in the great state of Louisiana and Texas. So what about lure and bait? Do you think bait's important, or do you pre-bait, or is it just lure? Do you use urine?
I usually put bait down in the hole. You know, if I'm, say we're gonna do like a dirt hole, I'll put the bait down in the hole, little gland lure or food lure right on the lip, and then I'll, you know, give it a shot of red fox urine. You know, and in my red fox urine, I like to add about a quarter to a third of glycerin in there, give it a good shake, you know, and I think that holds that scent longer, you know, at the set. And, you know, my dad had me doing that when I was a, you know, teenager, you know.
Well, with him going out to Arizona, you better.
Yeah, you know, because, I mean, especially Arizona or Texas or, you know, any of them dry climate especially, you know. But,
so when you're doing the lure and bait, or do you think it's important to have different smells at the different holes, or is it, or do you just have a pattern you get in at a time?
I usually will put one lure and bait at one set, and then I'll, you know, right across from it, if I'm setting like an old logging road, I'll try and change it up a little bit. Yeah, I like to use a gland lure and a bait on one side, and a food lure and on the other side. Traditionally, I've tried it both ways, and the first set, if I'm going to catch something, I usually catch something in the first set I made because that is the best spot.
You knew that.
And I knew it. And a lot of times you're forcing that second set, but for some reason you set it anyways. And sometimes like you say, you catch doubles, and but a lot of times that first set you make, you'll catch a gray fox, and you'll come back, and whatever you catch, cat or carry fox, you'll catch it in that first set. So usually your first instinct and what you caught your eye is the best.
Well, that's the reason I just set one trap for location. Yeah. I'd rather set two traps on the one set, but that's what I've always noticed. You instinctively know that's the spot.
Yeah.
And then the other ones may or may not catch, but normally percentage-wise, it's way down.
Yeah.
And I'm too lazy to go dig two holes if I don't have to.
Yeah.
So...
But like with the locations and where you're picking that first spot, that's why I tell guys is, when you get out of it, because when they guys first start out, I think that they're overthinking it, and they just, once you start learning that, it becomes like your first habit, and once it's your first habit to walk to that location, you're not even thinking about it. I mean, like there's a trail here, and if I said go down there, pick out the spot, you would just instinctively go down there and pick out the exact spot you want. You wouldn't be thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that just comes with, I think, with experience. And, that's what, the more traps and, guy sets, the better and faster he's going to be at picking them spots. So.
Because, like, you're talking about micro set, micro locations.
Yeah.
People want to know where to put the trap. You can tell them a location.
Yeah.
But to try to, you'd have to see every single spot. Like if someone calls like that on the phone or an email, you have to have a picture with a video with a satellite coming out of space so you can get a gist. And those micro, that's what's hard to try to explain to somebody.
Because what I try to describe to people is, because you got the location, and you can say, like we've talked about with the logging roads or the crop changes. But to me, the location, that's the location. But then the location inside that location of where you're actually going to plant your trap is just as important as the bigger area. Because if you don't pick a good spot with a good approach, where you've got some... I like to think I have control. Whether I have control or not, it helps me sleep at night to know thinking I have control. But that location, inside that location, for that approach... I think is just as important, as the major location you're going to set.
Well, think of a couple of hot spots and try to explain that micro location. I mean, what are you
like? You got a gravel road, and then the oil well company had put in like a side road there, and that would say them grays or predators are going to be running up and down that road, and they're going to hit that side road. That would be like you stop your truck and you're in a real good location. The thing is, when you get out of your truck, the location that you're in, then there's going to be a location inside of that where, like, there's a on the side of the road, there'd be like a little bush sticking up, something that when you first glance out and you look around, that caught your eye. Or something that sticks out just a little bit more than everything else, where that coyote's going to run up, and when he's running up there, he's going to take a leak on that spot. And that little bit of a point that most people wouldn't even notice, that you see that, and that would be your location inside that location of where you're going to want to put your set. And you ask yourself, why am I going to put this set here? After a while, you don't have to ask yourself no more. It just becomes like your first nature takes over, and and the more sets you've made, and some guys pick up on it real quick, and other ones just takes longer, just like playing football, hockey, anything else you're going to do in your life.
So you have the big location, which we'll call the little poppy set.
Yeah.
And then the little location, which is the granddaddy pappy set, because that's the one that really matters.
Yeah, that's the one that matters.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's so hard to do, because when we did, I've done some training in the eastern side with people, and they're like, well, where do you put a flat set? I'm like, flat set's anywhere that you can use anything. So we'll walk down, like we're looking at a trail that no one else can see but us.
Yeah.
But you see, well, this is sticking out. You could stick it in you could smear the side of the tree, you could put it under the roots, and you go down to the grass, and you go down. But then you back off and go, now, which one of those just from looking at it from the animal's point of view, does it, do you just automatically look at
it? Yeah, because there's, like that row, there's 10 spots down through there, but one of them's going to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
The approach is going to be the best, the way the animal's going to.
Isn't it crazy how that works? Yeah. You would think if they're on the road with the lure, it wouldn't make any difference.
It does make a difference. Yep. Mm-hmm. I think it's just as important as the location, you know.
That's great. I was thinking maybe we had to go steal the man's lawnmower keys over there. So quiet. So luckily that's gone.
I keep looking at that row thing. That's pretty good looking.
I bet it is.
Yeah. I guarantee some runs down that road sooner or later.
Yeah.
But
so do you trap any different in Michigan than you do Louisiana?
Because the undergrowth is different than what we have there.
Which there are you talking about?
In Michigan is the undergrowth and the way that they're traveling is, you know, seems different than in Michigan. And I'm trying to put it into words. The general idea of the whole sets and everything, looking for the location, the generality of the whole thing is about the same. You know, the locations that, you know, is different sometimes because, you know, where I'm at up there, there's broken ground, you know, broken woods and farm ground and stuff. And, you know, I'll like to find like a trail that's going through the woods, you know, from field to field, you know, something like that. And like the old logging roads again, but you know, the gravel pits, you know, you catch quite a few grays and around the gravel pits, you know.
Well, when I went out with Harry that time and we were just talking about coyote locations, now I know Michigan's a big state and it's going to change a lot, but I noticed the same thing up at the UP. The undergrowth and the brush is gentler, where an animal could move through it easier wherever he wanted to. Yeah. Where like in Louisiana or the further south you get, it's like, come over here so I can make you bleed.
Yeah.
And the animals know that too. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that causing a difference.
And the thing is being from the north and, you know, being, you know, like they have the sawbriars down there, you know, and the way that I'm looking at it, maybe it's closer to being the same than, but I'm just looking at it differently, you know, like the locations and stuff. You know, you don't know if it's you or it really is that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you know, it just seems the way that they move is different, and it would have to be because, I mean, not even a gray fox, as tough as they are, want to get wrapped up in a sawbriar.
Mm-hmm. But
if you northern guy's never seen a sawbriar, you don't want to meet a sawbriar.
But y'all do have stuff like primrose and stuff that grows up where you're at.
The worst somewhere I got is like a raspberry bush, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that is gentle.
We ain't hardly got only one poisonous snake, no big thorns, really. You know, like prickly, I think we got prickly pears. That's like crab apples stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you don't go climb on them, you don't have a problem. But
yeah, that's one thing, like being in Pennsylvania. Seeing the difference of everything from leaf down on the trees always been, because it's always like feathery and you should see a fairy running around and it's nice and soft and then I go back home and it's like, you know, the gang members on the corner of the hood saying, come over here, get you some of this.
That's some rough country down there.
When you were out with your, did you learn to trap like the cats with your dad in Arizona, or were y'all doing something different then?
Then it, with him, it was more, he was a self-taught fox trapper, and he trapped bobcats like he, you know, trapped red fox.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, and he had started trapping coyotes, you know, so the way he was trapping cats was like a cross between a coyote trapper and a red fox trapper. You know, he wasn't hanging the flags. Wasn't using feathers, he was just setting locations and, you know, and, you know, catching cats like that. But if he had been using, you know, like some of the tactics that, you know, they're using today, and, you know, my guys might even been using them, we just didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, the catch probably would have even been higher than what it was, you know.
Now, when you said location, even when you were out west, were y'all location trappers then, or were you sign trappers?
You had to be a location because there was so much sign you wouldn't know where to set. Yeah, you know? I mean, you couldn't put your hand down in one of them washes, and like in Arizona, I mean, it was just crazy. But you know, that I didn't know.
Because the track could last for 9 months.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that. I'm just going crazy out there. I was an 19-year-old kid.
We're gonna have 95 fox tomorrow.
I don't know how we're gonna skin all. We're gonna have to get more knives, you know. But it's definitely different trapping out west. Like, you know, we're gonna talk about later about the Texas thing. You know, I mean, it's a real adjustment going from the east with the woods and stuff to going into And I thought, like with the Texas deal, I thought, you know, because I had trapped Arizona, it would be similar, but it wasn't. There wasn't the big washes and stuff. And, you know, and going from place to place, I mean, there is a definite difference. Mm-hmm. If there was none in the animals, just where the locations are is so much, you know, different.
Because the difference between Texas, east or south Texas, and New Mexico is night and day.
Yeah.
And then when you get in the east, like eastern Texas, it's like Mississippi or Louisiana.
Yeah.
And that's night and day.
Yeah.
Because I remember the first time I went to Texas, I was thinking like cowboy movies and open, and you get on a lot of those roads, you can't see 20 feet. There was less visibility there than was in the mountains of Tennessee. Just how thick it was. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about mink.
Okay.
Now, you may have to lead this more than me because you've got more experience with them, but how long have you been trapping mink? Because that's a love of yours,
I love trapping mink. Back before I had to worry about any money when I was a teenager, that's what I trapped, and I'd just go out and just pound them. And we had some, you know, what I consider good mink trappers in our area. I mean, in our area, if you break 100 mink, you know, you're a good mink trapper. And we had guys that would break that, you know, and they were like two generations, three generations above me. They were like, you know, like World War II vets and stuff. Mm-hmm. That era mink trapper, you know, and they were pretty serious guys. And I'd go out and, you know, my dad had was more of always a land trapper and coon trapper, but I'd go out there and I'd set the mink traps and I'd watch them guys what they were doing, and you know, and it just got better and better and kept, you know, accumulating spots where, you know, I had, you know, was catching good mink numbers. And you know, I ended up breaking 100 twice, and I was happy. I mean, I was.
But
you're
like a little peacock up there walking around.
I went to the trapping convention. I was like 20 years old. I was just, nobody else cared. Mm-hmm. But in our area, it was a big accomplishment.
Did you get a T-shirt? 100 mink catch accomplished.
No, but I was happy. Yeah, I always like trapping mink, you know, and I like blind setting mink. But if I'm out production trapping, like in our area, you know, it's mostly, you know, pocket set, pocket set, pocket set, you know, flashy pocket set after that. You know, and again, you're, you know, back, it must be like a something in my brain because it's like two again. I'm setting two. But I like blind setting them, you know. When you can put your trap out there and, you know, and see where they're gonna, what their travel system is through the roots or along a bank, and you know, you catch one, and I mean, it's just exciting. It's exciting to me. I mean, I get excited just talking about it. I do.
And I can tell you've already speeded up there.
Yeah.
Now you're not behind the table.
No.
You're mink trapping.
Yep.
The first mink I ever caught, I tried for 2 years before I caught one. We don't have a lot of mink. And my little brother, which is not a trapper, not an outdoorsman whatsoever, came up for Christmas. We went and checked traps before everybody got up for Christmas. And about 3 miles from the house in this little bitty creek, looking at it now, because I've been past there. So, and every time I go by there, I think about that little female mink.
Yeah.
And it was a blind set just with a little bitty creek coming out of nothing, going to nothing. And there was a female mink in there. And that was the coolest Christmas present in the world.
Yep. Yep,
I think I sold that mink for a whopping $3.50.
Yep. I got a spot just like that where I put a 110 there. There was like a little spring. I couldn't tell you why I set that trap there. And I thought about that afterwards, like you say, when you drive by there. And I caught a mink. and I've always thought in my mind, why was that mink there? It's like the $1 million question. Why did it was that? It was just his time to go. Mm-hmm. You know? it's fun. I mean, and mink trapping, you know, it's hard to make the money, at least where I'm at, mink trapping, because, you know, the mink prices aren't what they used to be in the old days, and it just costs so much more to go do it. But it's like weasel trapping. It's just, you know, it's fun to go do. And it's, you know, every time I see one down there, and a lot of times when you're mink trapping, if you're doing running pockets, that's the stuff, you'll see spots for where I'm at to, you know, you catch rats, and, you know, there's other stuff to trap there. You set 110s, and, you know, at the end of the day, you got a respectable catch, and, you know, and mm-hmm. it's just a lot of fun.
Now, since you've been a quote adult, have you just went out and just hell with everything else and mink trapped?
Last year I started playing around with it, you know, just trapping mink, but it wasn't hard like I would like. But I've been kicking it around the last year or two, you know, just going putting a good beating on them up there. But, you know,
I mean, I've seen you selling your Death Dealer T-shirt, so I think you're making like $500,000 a show. So you should be at least be able to go mink trapping if you want to.
Yeah, but I've had a lot of good times in my life mink trapping. I met a lot of good guys out mink trapping. One time when I was about, I don't even know if I had a driver's license, but I was coming, and this kind of set a tone in my life. I was coming up a bank, and I wasn't catching nothing that day, and I got up to the top of the hill, and there's Ken Smythe, the bottom edge guy. Mm-hmm. He's standing there in the road. And I had caught, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 mink, which was respectable for like a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid. And that was my best year to date, and I was so proud about that. And I get up there, and I hadn't caught hardly nothing. And Ken had a whole bunch of mink in his truck, you know, like probably 6 or 8 mink. And we're talking, and that's the first time I ever met him. And he told me, he says, "You keep trying," he says, "you'll be able to catch mink like this." And I thought right then and there, I said, you know what? The rest of my life, I said, I am never going to get stop and talk to another trapper that I got more fur in my truck than him. And I've always took that to heart. And I, you know, and that hasn't always rang true, but it ain't because I ain't tried, you know. I mean, you run into some pretty good trappers out there, and sometimes it's just a bad day or a better trapper.
When I went to Iowa, once I kind of got established and I could just plain outwork people. Yeah. I definitely don't think I'm a better trapper than a lot of people. I could outwork people.
Yeah.
Especially when I was younger. It was just so focused. And I went out to Iowa. And everybody that met me up to that point, pretty much, whenever we compared trucks, you know, I would always be grinning when I got back in there. Mm-hmm. I went to Iowa, and that was a totally humbling, different experience.
Yeah.
I'd have 35 in the back of the truck, you know, and I'm feeling, you know, roostery about that. Then you meet some guy you never heard of, never wrote a book, never did a video, and he's got an 89 in the back of a custom-built drying rack in the back of his truck as he's going down there.
Yeah.
Nicest guy you ever met.
Yeah.
He just stomped you into the ground four ways from Sunday, and you're like going, whoa.
Yeah. Well, that's the guy who's going to beat you, because he didn't want to carry a camera around and take video.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
He was actually out there getting it done.
But I met several guys out there that, you know, talking about, you know, oh man, yeah, I like this, you do this, and that's really cool, and how many you got? 24, how many you got? 48, and you're like, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does, and I know what you're...
I mean, back when I met him, you know, Ken Smythe now is, you know, wasn't Ken, you know, if I'd have known, you know, if Ken would have been a well-known guy back then, you know, it would have been different. I said, well, I got beat by Ken Smythe, and, you know, but, you know, he wasn't Ken Smythe that everybody knows today,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, he was just some trapper that I wanted to be able to beat, so, but he was an awesome mink trapper, he really was. Smart guy too.
Now, when you're doing your pockets, it seems like you talk to Red. He's got a special shovel with a special size, with a special way he puts his trap, and he's got to wear certain socks and all. Do you have that when you do your pockets?
Yeah, the shovel. I found a shovel last year at the Wisconsin convention. I spotted it was at Cumberland's booth, and I had a yellow handle, and I seen this yellow handle, and it was just like it called to me. I went right over there, and I wouldn't have
cared. Come here,
it,
Jeff.
That was about it, too.
Daddy, come here.
That was about it, because they, I went over there, and it wouldn't have mattered hardly what they had on that. I was buying that shovel. It was like the perfect shovel, and that's why I told them guys at the demo yesterday for Mick. I told them, I said, you just got to get the right shovel. I said, if you got to buy three of them and throw them away to get the right one, just, you know, that fits you. I said, you might use my shovel and it won't do the perfect hole for you, but, you know, just find a good,
what makes it special?
It just had, it's like, you know, just narrow enough, you know, where you can get a good pocket and you can, in the back, you can get kind of a lean to it, you know, where mm-hmm. you put your bait back there and it's not laying in the water, you know, and, I don't know. I just love it.
It's just yours.
It's in my truck.
The only reason it's funny because I know what you're talking yeah. about.
It's crazy, but I get sentimental. Like, I'll have a bag, and it just kills me to get rid of an old trapping bag. And, you know, I don't know. I guess we're like baseball players, just superstitious, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know.
Yeah.
See, it's funny.
That's the truth. So when you're doing these pockets, like what you're saying about mink, and I've been playing around more with mink than I ever have. What's cool to me about mink trapping is it puts you in the zone like you are with otter trapping, which is totally different than any other animal.
Yeah.
Because it's not how hard you work; it's how hard you think.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a lot cooler.
Yeah.
Than the other thing, because you're thinking about how they're moving or going, or and I don't know enough about mink to really know what they're doing, but in my mind I've got the whole interstate mapped out and where they're stopping off for lunch. And
everybody seems to have an opinion on the mink, whether they're a water animal or land animal, and anybody can have their opinion they want. My opinion is, like an otter, when I'm looking at them, they're a water animal that will go on the land without question, just take off. They're not scared, but they are the most comfortable in the water. I think that mink is a land animal. I think of him as a land animal that has no problem going in the water, like the complete opposite of the otter, you know. And a lot of times I'm setting that up where I'm figuring they're going to be on the land. Because like when it starts freezing up more and the coons stop moving, I'll do a lot of like dirt hole sets for mink along right on the edge of the bank of the shoreline and stuff, and you know, I tear them up, and that's figuring that they are running that land and not swimming down the creek like an otter would.
Well, back when after I took instruction from Johnny on mink, it brought back something that I saw but didn't quite gather at the time. When I was doing a lot of that work for Marion County for Beaver, there were stretches I would spend a month and a half in a canoe,
uh-huh.
every day in a canoe. And they're quiet, and we have good current in the Sequatchie River. And so when you get on those stretches, you can move, uh-huh. but you don't have to make any noise. And you just get to, you know, you're looking, and you're looking for sign. And after you're out there a lot, you start seeing stuff you don't normally see. I've seen mink four times in the canoe.
Uh-huh.
One time it was close to the water, one single mink. Two times it was a pair of mink, and one time it was three mink.
Uh-huh.
And the two and the three mink that were not next to the water running, because of our flooding and we're so hilly, you have the water at normal levels, and then you'll have a bank. And because we get such mass flood, it'll cut in like sometimes 20 and 25 feet away from what you think the creek bank is.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes up again, and then you have the forest and everything else. All the two doubles and the triple were all against the high bank away from the water 40 feet.
Yeah.
And they were up against it like you think a bridge.
Yeah.
And they were playing and running, and they would run up... the most amazing thing to watch, because they covered that area when I saw them, like probably 30 yards in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, they were flat and moving. Yeah. They would duck in behind roots. They'd come out. They'd go up on a tree. They would go around. But they were doing all their hunting not where anywhere I thought of a mink.
Yeah. Because if you talk to somebody and they said, oh, I seen a family otter today. your first instinct is they've seen them swimming around.
Mm-hmm.
But if they see a family of mink, it's like by a dam or something, they're going to be up on the shoreline, mm-hmm. you know, running around and that. And, you know, and the thing is, when you're setting them up to try and catch a lot, it makes a, you know, the location makes a big difference on, you know, where them animals are, how they're actually traveling, you know, down, you know, the water systems or, you know, any of that stuff.
When we were shooting that night vision footage, we camped on a beaver dam with one of the cameras, and I've never been so mad at mink in my life, because those cameras that I were using was way different than a trail cam like today. So it's a regular camera, like handy cam, uh-huh. so it had to power up.
Yeah.
So you had like a second delay before. And those mink on this one dam would burn it up all night long. So they would turn on the cameras for movement, but they were crossing the dam so fast. On the far end, every now and then, if you stopped the screens, you could see the tail.
Yeah.
And those mink on that beaver dam, they would burn a whole hour and a half tape up,
uh-huh.
5 minutes at a time. They would zoom, turn it on, they'd leave, they'd come back all night long. They were wearing that dam out.
Yeah.
When they had really good water on both sides, but they were staying right on that dam.
Yeah.
You know, and then, because I've never done a lot, I've been setting these boxes I was telling you about now on dams.
Yeah.
And that's been some of my best locations.
Yeah. That's what's so great about mink trapping. Basically, you know, when you're predator trapping or coon trapping, with, you know, you're using DPs or, you know, any of that, you're like set kind of on what you're doing, the locations. With the mink, I mean, you're only boxed in by the limits of your own imagination on how to catch a mink. I mean, he might be running the edge, he could be up on top, you know. I mean, you know, you could use a 110 conibear. I mean, you could, you know, put in a blind set buried. I mean, you know, I mean, bottom edge sets. I mean, you know, there's no reason to get bored mink trapping, because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, you can put in pocket sets. I mean, it's unlimited on what you could do. You know, I mean, you know, and that's, I mean, they're just a fun animal to trap. I've enjoyed trapping them, and, you know, and a lot of kids, you know, start out that way. When I, you know, it seems like things have changed now, where kids get into it and they use the DPs, and that's how they started. But a lot of kids, you know, like they were talking about the World War II generation, they came up mink trap. Those were all mink trappers back then. That's where the money was at, was in the mink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that carried over into my dad's generation, and then, you know, my generation. And I think we're losing like a whole generation of mink trappers. They're not starting up that way, you know.
And plus, new trappers now want to jump straight into coyotes, wolves, or mountain lions.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and because when you read like some of the, I think it was some of the older Bill Nelson writings, they're getting $30 for mink, or was it Don Bolt? I mean, this was, you know, back in the late 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
They were getting $30-$35 for good mink and $2 for a coon.
Yeah.
And they were doing everything they could to coon-proof mink sets.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to keep them completely out of the situation.
Yeah.
You know, that's the opposite of now.
Yeah, exactly opposite. But, yeah, a lot of them guys back in the day, my dad used to have these barrels full of old fox drags, you know, them little fox drags. And I remember going to a convention with them, and, I mean, them older guys would come up there, and they'd buy them, and that's what they were using them for, was mink trapping. And they'd have their favorite, you know, all these spots. Like I told the young guys yesterday, so if you go and get all these spots and year after year after year, you know, if you catch 5 mink this year in blind sets, next year you come up with 4 or 5 more. And I said, over a 10-year period, which is not that long, it seemed long, but not to us now, you know, you build it up to where you got 50, 60 spots to be able to go catch mink. But the thing is the old guys knew that if you go and have a spot like that and you don't use a drag, and that a coon tears that place up, it could be gone forever. Mm-hmm. You know, if you choose the root system out, and otherwise, I mean, that spot, until that water changes, I mean, it could be good for, you know, 20 years.
Could you imagine how happy they would have been to have the Sabretooth Junior?
They'd have been pretty happy.
If you caught a coon, it still can't go anywhere.
No.
And I bet most beavers couldn't go anywhere.
No, they'd be pretty happy. Yeah, because them old fox drags, I mean, they had some real horror stories on them, but didn't tear up their mink set, though. Mm-hmm. Might run off with it, but...
Well, when I went to the Trapper's College, Kermit Stern, he was like the mink guy at the Trapper's College. He's a really... Did you ever get to meet him?
No. Nope.
Oh, no.
My dad had met him, but I never did.
I mean, just... intelligence beyond belief when you talk to him, you know, and just no nonsense and really good dry sense of humor. Uh-huh. I mean, really cool guy. But that was his thing, was no steak.
Yeah.
No steak.
Yeah.
You know, and he was setting all pockets. He didn't really do a lot of blind sets. Uh-huh. He's like, why would you want to have to dig a hole twice? Let him get away from it if you catch a coon, and then you just go back to your set.
Yeah. Yeah, because nothing will ruin a mink set faster than a raccoon. He'll definitely tear it up. But
because I don't know if you ever met Red Edgman, which was really big in the FTA.
No,
he's passed away now. But his big thing was the 3 to 4 foot, a little bitty chain, in those window sash weights that used to be in everybody's houses.
Mm-hmm.
He would just like scour flea markets and yard sales for these little sash weights.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him, and I'm like going, that's quick. You just drop it in the water, set the trap. He's doing a lot of blind sets.
Is that like window weights?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Window sash weights.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, they weigh like 3 pounds.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot to them. Not the best thing to do nowadays with coon.
No.
Because they don't hook up on nothing.
No. No, as long as it runs straight.
I got away from them things pretty quick.
Yeah. I think everybody gets into trapping. So everybody knows somebody's got used to have them laying around. Everybody tried them on beaver drowners.
Yeah. I went to tie plates. That did pretty well, but they're heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the mink, it's so much more mental. It's so much more fun.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like if you take a month off for coyote trapping, the first coyote, you know, when you first see him for the first time and he ain't like trapped for a month or all season if it's winter, it's kind of like, holy cow, there's a...
Yeah.
But every mink was that way, to me, anyway.
Yeah, it still is with me. The thing with, you know, mink trapping, I mean, it's not real expensive to get into. I mean, I like mink trapping. I like a 1.5. You know, I use up to like a 1 3/4. You know, I know like Don Powell uses them number 2 square jaws, but I usually don't go that big. But so it's, I mean, it's a, you know, on the cheaper end of the traps. You know, I mean, I don't use wire no more because the wire ain't the way it used to be years ago. But I mean, you know, I used to use the cable. So I mean, you have your cable or your wire, a cheap end trap, a shovel, bait, and maybe some, you know, mink lure. And I mean, you can't get, you know, you go in some staking, you know, T-bar stakes, wolf fangs, whatever you want to use. I mean, it doesn't get much cheaper than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean it's fun just to run light. And you know, like my dad said, he said, I'm surprised at all that newfangled stuff that they got that we were able to catch anything back in the day.
Well, I can only imagine. I want to meet your dad one day, but I can only imagine if I ever gave a mink demo. My favorite mink trap is a number 4 Sleepy Creek with a big pan.
Number 4 Sleepy Creek with a big pan. Yeah.
Which is way too big. But when they do come down through a blind set, I hardly ever miss a mink with a 4.5 by 5 inch pan.
You're right. They ain't going nowhere.
And it's like a killer trap.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But when you lose one, it hurts more.
Yeah.
You know. And if I could figure out how to get an 11 with a 4.5 inch pan and it still functions somehow, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
Because the jaw spreads are relevant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to probably take some work to get that, though.
There's a project for anybody out there. We need a trap that the pan can be bigger than the jaws and it's still closed.
Yeah. Somebody will come up with it now.
I hope they do.
Like the wings on one of them airplanes or something.
I've seen people do folding up pans and all kind of crazy stuff, but yeah.
The one-shot pans.
So what, to kind of close up, because this will be a little shorter this week, but we got alligator to go eat.
Yeah, and Norm be eating on the alligator on me.
Him and Jen lead all our food.
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about locations, what are some of the what really turns you on when you see it?
I like by the culverts, or the mink seem to get up and play around the culverts. And you'll find where they went to the bathroom up on the ends of a lot of culverts. I look for
you're
that.
Talking round tube
culverts. Yeah, like the round tube culverts seem to be where I'm looking, you know, where they went to the bathroom there. But and a lot of times by them culverts, there's like overhanging grass and stuff. And I'll kind of, you know, rip a hole out in that grass and, you know, dig a pocket and then, you know, just smear the mud around and make it look like something, like a muskrat was messing around there. And I'll use, you know, feathers on the pocket set for mink, you know, all eye appeal. But with the location, I like something where look, you know, for like a pocket, like a pool, you know, where they'll be in there looking for, you know, crawfish or, you know, something like that. And with a, you know, a sloping bank, you know, to get it. And I'll even cut that pocket off so it's straight up and down, you know, to force them in. But if you get the pocket, because if you dig enough pockets, you're going to have some that are too wide, even if you do have the magic shovel. And if I set on the outside of the hole, because if that mink just comes up there and is interested and checks it out, and you're set up too far in the hole, what's going to happen is you're going to be standing right where your trap should have been. So, you know, if you move that trap back outside that hole and he just doesn't commit to the hole but just checks it out, you still catch him, or a rat or whatever. So I don't set too far up into the hole. If I do dig it a little bit too wide, like I was saying, I'll take just little bitty sticks, you know, to kind of force him back over the top of that, on top of that pan, you know, kind of set on just anywhere on the outside of that trap just to force him on the inside.
Okay. So you're looking at places, that, if I understand you, you're looking for places they actually hunt and not just travel.
Yeah, where they're kind of hanging out and, you know, and
having mink parties
and, you know, and but on the you know, a lot of the blind set and stuff, I'm looking like under roots where they're turned up on the closest part of the bank, like where the water is, and then there'll be like a real tight spot, you know, I'll kind of dig that out. And usually when I put my trap, I'll like it right up against the wall. And then I'll put like an outside guide stick, just like right where the dog would be facing. You know, if it was facing out, it'd be right there at the dog.
See, if you use 6.5-inch traps on mink, you wouldn't have to do that.
That's true. My thing is, I'm so used to doing it my way that I would still put it there. You always got to force them to the inside.
Well, is there any things that you think are just massive misconceptions that kind of get people going down the wrong path with mink?
No, I think that a lot of times that people are too, with mink, you got to wait. A lot of times, it seems like sometimes you'll catch mink right away. Other times, you know, it takes a while. I think that people get too jumpy on pulling their traps, moving their traps. You know, you just wait on them. There's probably, if it's a good brook or creek or whatever, it'd probably be, you know, the mink will be down through there. You know, just wait on them. And
how long are you thinking? Like a week, 10 days, 2 weeks?
10 days to 2 weeks. You know, I mean, you know, if you go over there and catch a couple mink, I'm not gonna like wait for the third one or fourth one to come through. I'm gonna pull up and start looking for new place to put them traps.
Is that for production or farming purpose?
Yeah, for production. You know, it'd be for production, because you always want to, you know, chew up new ground. And, you know, you don't want to just die on the same ground. And,
that's a good mental image, chewing up new ground.
Yeah.
That's how I'll be thinking about you when I know you're out mink trapping, chewing up new ground.
Yeah, that's what I try to do, chew up new ground all the time.
Any last words of wisdom before we go to eat alligator? Besides, don't eat alligators.
If you want to be a mink trapper, set a lot of traps. If you want to catch big numbers, you got to set a lot of traps. You got to put in your time, and it'll come. If there's mink in your area, and yeah, you set a lot of traps, put in your time to learn them. Look for tracks where they went. Look for scat. and just, you know, look, and, you know, look on the internet and look up about mink. Look how many they have. I mean, know everything about your quarry that you, that, you know, I mean, you know, everything. I look up everything. I'll get on Wikipedia and look up subspecies of mink. I was looking up subspecies of coyotes a couple weeks ago and putting that on Facebook, you know, to the guys and stuff. But I just want to know everything about them. Because there probably is no trick that I'm ever going to learn that nobody else knows. But I think I will.
You know, I just
want that edge that, you know, that I have, you know. And that's what I'm trying for.
Well, cool deal.
Problem is, if I did learn, I'd tell everybody about it, so just keep a secret.
Then it wouldn't be a secret anymore.
No.
No, yeah, I can definitely get that. Well, I'm going to end on something you said that just stuck in my mind. Even when you're learning and you're not catching the way that you think, that's not wasted time, because the learning, to me, is more important than what the sometimes the caught animal and the money you get for it.
Yep.
So it's not. Yep. It's not wasted.
No. So a smart trapper is going to learn from where we set a trap and he never caught nothing, and you set the trap back there and he never catch nothing. I mean, you know, at some point, you know, a person should say, well, that's not a good spot to put them, and, you know, move on. You know, irregardless of what it looks like or you think it's the best spot in the world, but if they're, you know, if you consistently don't catch nothing in that type of location, you know, I mean, it's not a waste of time. I mean, you know, every time you go out there and you pick up a little bit, and, you know, it's like I always think of it like a bookshelf, where every time you learn something, you got this big empty bookshelf when you start, and you just keep putting a book on it and another book and another book, and every experience you have, you're putting that book on there. And some of it you don't even realize you probably know, but you're learning every time you go out there. And you know, and you'll every pocket you dig, you'll be a little bit better. You'll dig a little bit better pocket, just like dirt holes. You know, I tell you, my young guys, go out there in your yard in July. It's just, or, you know, unless you got a real nice yard and your parents will kill you, but just start digging dirt holes and get,
then you go to your neighbor's yard.
Yeah, then you go to your neighbor's, but you just, you know, you just keep digging, and you're good in the end. You're going to get better at doing it. And, you know, just like you said, you know, it ain't a waste of time. I mean, you're always learning something, even if you don't know, and just keep filling up that bookshelf. And by the time, and when you're really good at this, you'll be too old or too broken down to do it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the reward. By the time you really start figuring out, it's too late.
Yep. Body shot and your mind shot, you just can't do it no more.
Yeah, that ain't no joke. Because since me and you are such specimens of health.
Yeah. At least I'm trying. Fell apart here, but
well, man, I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks
and
for having me.
What I'm really looking forward to is the Louisiana and the Texas one.
Yeah, I'll have to keep myself under control on that one. I will.
Yeah, there'll be crying and laughing going on in that show.
Yeah. I'm sure there will be.
All right. Well, it's Jeff and Clint signing out.